All right, Brad, Sonny, I'm so excited to have you guys on the show. I think it's gonna be really fun today. And maybe could you all start off by telling the audience your background? How did you become sales managers?
Yeah, I'll start. First of all, Derek, thanks for having me, and Sonny, of course. We're super excited. We've been talking about this for the last 2 months, so hopefully this goes as planned, but it might get a little crazy. We'll see. But yeah, I'll start with my story. So my story is I, fresh out of college, started as an outside sales rep. I was selling packaging like boxes, tape, bubble wrap. It's kind of one of those situations where, everyone's like 50 plus, been doing it for, 25, 30 years, and no one really wants to help. You don't really have a manager that gives you any guidance. So it's one of those things where they just throw you out there and say, hey, go make some cold calls and figure it out. Bring us some sales. So I did that for a year, and it was one of the worst experiences of my life, but probably, the biggest learning opportunity that I ever had from that point. And then I knew from that point forward that I needed a good manager. I needed to go somewhere, that was going to give me a foundation to set up my career. And then it turns out I took another job that gave me the same exact experience as the packaging company, where it didn't really have much guidance, kind of just here's the product, go sell it, see what happens. Did that for another year and essentially just failed at both. And it just didn't go well because kind of was just set up for failure. And so then that's when I really had to take a look at it and see, what direction do I need to go in? Is sales even right for me? It looks like I'm not really good at this, right? So maybe I should think about, becoming, I don't know, a marketer or something like that. I just had no clue the direction I really wanted to go in. And so I took 3 months, and I still lived at home at that time, to really think about it. And I decided that I wanted to find a company where I could have a good manager, people that are going to support me, younger people, and a company that I could really grow at. And then obviously I came across PatientPop and actually got the job as an SDR, which would be taking a step back. But at that point in my career, I just realized that I needed to get those fundamentals, and that's exactly what that program would do. So I was the third SDR hired at PatientPop, and that's where I got to work with the great Derek Jankowski as my manager, which really set me up for a great career moving forward. 4 years later, here we are. But ultimately got promoted within a year after being an SDR to an AE. Did that for about a year and a half or a little bit more than that, and then ultimately got promoted to a manager at PatientPop. And now we're here. So that's kind of my story.
Cool. Crazy story, Brad. I love your story, man. My story is a little bit different than Brad. So I started as a, I mean, I was a science major in college. Like I was always thinking about going to medical school. My brother was a doctor. So I always thought that's kind of the route I was going to go to also. And then when I was talking to him, it seemed like it wasn't going to be the right route for me. I think I was doing it for the wrong reason. So I always had this passion to act. So moved out to Los Angeles, started acting. I was doing commercials, ton of improv classes. I remember auditioning all the time. But as everyone knows, like being the broke actor in LA, that stereotype, that was me. Eventually I ran out of all the money I had saved. And someone told me, hey, you should check out tech sales. Like, I think it'd be awesome. There's some really cool startups around Santa Monica. So I started applying. At this point, I was probably a year and a half out of college. So I applied for the role, interviewed with Derek, and Derek gave me my first shot at to be an SDR and start ripping cold calls. And from there, just dialed in, obviously linked up with Brad, and we were Team Grind City, grinded our ways to be AAEs, where we both worked under the same manager. And then, I mean, to this day, we still work with him, Jess Strickland. Shout out, Jess, as closers and as managers today. So yeah, we went from SDR together to full cycle, fully self-generated closing rep to senior AE, and then sales management. So pretty cool journey. And I think it was just in about like 3 years that all kind of happened at PatientPop, me and Brad.
Yeah, there was a lot happening in a really short amount of time. What did you guys do? I'm going to batch a couple of questions. What made you decide you wanted to be a sales manager? And then what did you do in order to both prepare for it and then go after the role?
Yeah, for me, I knew as soon as I had that first job, I had two managers actually in that year. The first 6 months, I had the rah-rah, go figure it out, go look, in the phone book and go find people to sell to. And then let me know if you need help. And then if you do need help, still don't call me, right? Kind of one of those guys. just not very helpful at all. And then there was another manager, his name is Ramiro. I don't know if he'll ever listen to this, but shout out to Ramiro, because he had a huge impact on my life because he noticed that I was struggling, but saw the potential. He knew that I wanted it, that I wanted to work really hard, but just didn't have any direction. So he saw that and then took me under his wing and started working with me every single day, cared about me, checked in on me. And it was in that moment that I realized that I could do that, right? I think I can connect with people just like Ramiro can. And just what that meant to me was so great. And, you know, it gives me the chills just talking about it now, because from that point forward, I was like, okay, anything I do, I want to bust my butt to make sure that I can be ultimately a manager and manage people to help them grow, help them get better and you know, get all the things that they want in their career and in their life. So that was the biggest turning point for me. But I recognize, you know, that you don't just become a manager. You don't just like start applying after being a failing sales rep and say, hey, I want to be a manager. So the only way to do that is to be a great sales rep typically. So at Patient Pop, you know, I identified that I need to do really well, really quickly so I can get to that next level, which would be that closing role. And then I'm going to have to do the same thing, bust my butt, stand out, create a brand for myself, be different than everybody else. So that ultimately when it comes time, you know, when they're saying, hey, you know, we have an opening for manager, or we have an opening for, you know, this new job, that they'll come to me and say, hey, this is the guy that we want because of X, Y, and Z. So that was always my goal. And, you know, obviously that worked out. Let's go. So that's kind of my story with that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like how I ended up trying to get into, like what made me want to be a sales manager was like at Patient Pop, and Brad can attest to this, and Derek, I'm sure you could too. We had the opportunity of working with really great leadership, like all around from the day I started working with you, Derek, second manager, Ben Gravo, Jess Strickland, and then KD and Justin Welsh, obviously. Like being a part of those teams, there's something to learn from every single person. And I think they helped specifically me just get uncomfortable and grow. Like it was such a huge part of my personal growth that once I feel like I kind of went over the bridge, it made me want to throw over that rope to help other people along as well. So I always loved helping others, would come in early to start coaching them. I love seeing things start clicking for other reps. And I would love having, you know, one of my friends at Patient Pop, Mikey, he would come up to me after we would do cold call practice and say, hey, I just booked a demo with this guy. And to me, that became more satisfying than close that I had, right? Helping other people. And I remember Brad, when I came in as an SDR, Brad was the first guy that was helping me when I came in with Salesforce or objection handling, like just taking on those positions of leadership really, really early on before we were given permission, quote unquote, to do so. And I think at that point, like Brad and I, we didn't really fight for the manager positions. They're more offered to us because I think Katie and Jess saw us as these guys that are willing to help and spread their mission as leaders to the rest of the org, and wanted to bring us up naturally as well.
Right. You were already doing a large part of the job. You're already coaching people proactively, not yep. just waiting for people to come to you, which also happened, but talking to reps around you and helping them get better.
And I think that's the culture that we breed and bred at that time, you know, when you're a part of it, Derek, was that, you know, it's not just only your manager can teach you. It's like, we have all these people that are all hungry, all striving for that same goal. And so everybody wants to know, how are you doing this? And that's kind of how me and Sonny came up as account executives. Well, Sonny was the top guy. And, you know, I was struggling at first, and all I could see was Sonny just crushing it every single month. And I'm like, how the hell are you getting these meetings? How are you closing these docs so quickly? And so I started to work with Sonny. He even helped me with my growth, and I always give him credit for that. So I got to give you a quick shout out. But you know, everyone pushes each other to be better. And when you see the growth that somebody else can actually have, especially at this type of company, you just kind of want to be a part of that. You want to just keep spreading that and keep, you know, helping more and more people succeed, which is sweet.
Where do you think that culture came from? So culture is like the buzzword right now, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember that we had that. But where do you think it came from? What made new people come in and become part of that?
I can speak to one thing that I noticed, and when K KD joined Patient Pop, he brought in the tribal training there, where the reps were given the opportunity to really start coaching and practicing with other reps. So senior reps are allowed to do that. I feel like that helped nurture that culture of it's okay for you to start getting help from other reps. And it's okay as a top rep to get off the phone, spend that time practicing with newer reps, and also solidifying some of those sales principles in your own head as well. So like that was kind of the first step that made me feel more comfortable reaching out to other reps outside of that initial group of tribal trainers per se. And tribal training is pretty much new reps that can't come up as part of Patient Pop. If you're an SDR getting promoted to a closing role, you're doing tribal training with senior reps to just solidify any trainings or coachings going down.
Yeah, and I think in addition, it's just like one of those things, you just want to be that guy or gal. You know, you just see that one person on the floor, obviously different during COVID times, but you could hear, you know, that person that's just crushing it. And then, you know, everyone's talking about that person. And all you have to do is just say, hey, I want to be that one day. And then that person goes out and like finds out how, and then they can actually be it, which is the coolest thing. Like we're, you know, specifically Patient Pop, obviously we're talking about that a lot, but you're given the opportunity at 22, 23 to make six figures, which is pretty absurd very quickly. And obviously you see, we're talking here, you know, me and Sonny got promoted three different times in 3 to 4 years. You know, being managers at our age is obviously kind of unique, but it's because we were given that opportunity and you just grow so quickly and could learn so much in a short amount of time.
Can you talk about some of the mistakes that you made as early managers?
Yeah, I'll start. I think, and I still kind of struggle with this. The biggest one is there's that fine line between, you know, being the douchebag manager that holds the line and just, you know, holds every rep to such a high standard versus being liked, right? And that's the hardest thing, is just you want obviously everybody to like you. You know, you don't want to be that guy that, you know, people hate coming to work and, you know, just are afraid once there's, you know, a time put on their calendar or something like that. Like, I never wanted to be that. I've obviously experienced that before. So it's just finding that middle ground of, you know, how do you become somebody that still has very high expectations and, you know, make sure that your team actually, you know, rises to the occasion to hit those, but at the same time, still be that guy that, you know, you can come to and talk about your personal problems, or, you know, can be the one. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah. How do you do it?
Yeah. It's a good question. Yeah. It's hard. It's still something that I constantly try to do every single day, but it's more once you get the buy-in from your reps, that trust that they know that they're not like, I'm not here to just, you know, bust their balls and that's it. You know, it's like, I truly want you to be successful. If you're successful, I'm successful. And we're working together to do that, but you got to get their buy-in. You know, that takes time. Obviously it's trust just like any other relationship. So once you get that piece, and I think that's what I do really well with my team, is I can ask for things. I can ask somebody on my team to go get this, go do this today without any pushback on that, because they know that I have the best, or I have their best interest in mind. And again, I'm not trying to bust their balls. I want them to do well. And if I didn't do this, I'd be doing a disservice to you and your career. Right. So I think that's kind of how I do it. But again, it's a constant struggle. And I think it's something that every manager deals with and will continue to deal with forever.
Yeah. To add on that, I mean, it's something Brad and I were talking about this week, where there is that fine line between being liked versus sometimes getting uncomfortable with their reps and having that tough conversation. That down the line, I've had reps thank me for being tough on them early on. And at that time, there might have been some tears shed. It might have been a tough conversation, but that's why we're in this. We're in it to have an impact on people. And sometimes that means you have to get uncomfortable. And if you know deep down inside you're doing it with their best intention in mind, and because you know their goals and it's coming from a good place, you can have those conversations. And sometimes you have to be, you got to be a little tough, and it's got to be some tough love. But at the same time, if it's coming from the right place, I think it's the right thing to do. So, and that's something that comes up time and time again, because it's the easy road to just let someone go on and fail themselves and fail their own goals. It's tougher to actually go ahead and speak up about it.
What was helpful for you, Sonny, when you were building that initial trust that let you get to this place?
I think there's a few pieces, right? So Brad, I think you did this too with your team, where we had those checklists that KD gave us, or this list of questions that you had to ask all of your reps. In the moment, it was the first thing I did in the first week. That was the first thing KD told me. He's like, I want you to ask your reps these questions in your one-on-ones. And as we went through this list, it was just like understanding the reps and what really motivates them, what pushes them, how do they like to be recognized. And to me, the answers are crazy, right? Because you think in one way, where I was out to be successful for different reasons, and you assume that everyone's like you. And some people have different goals, whether those goals are to buy a Louis Vuitton bag. One of my reps just wants to be the top rep on the team. One of my reps hates recognition, would rather never be shouted out on Slack, never be called out in any meeting, even though she's an excellent rep. So it's really identifying like those pieces early on, and then using those to help you build trust along the way, because you really know what speaks to them and it can help you understand them. Not saying that just one checklist of questions is all you got to do. It's an ongoing process, but it's a great way to start, and also starts that relationship off with asking questions and seeing what speaks to these individual reps.
And I think also just one last thing to add on there is, you know, I had great managers. I obviously had you, and I had Jess Strickland as an account executive. And then today he's the director of inside sales. But something that he always did was he could speak to us on a personal level, but he just held that extremely high standard that we do not fall short of that standard. And that's how he runs that team. So just getting to experience that and knowing what it feels like on that side as a rep is probably the biggest thing, because I can put myself in those shoes and recognize how I responded to that and maybe make a little adjustments to it, you know, and make it kind of more my own. But knowing that those little things pushed me to go a little bit further because I wanted to work hard for him. Right? Because he had that standard. It's kind of like the Belichick, you know, situation. You know, people want to work for him because he's the GOAT. And you would think most people want to work for themselves, you know, but sometimes we get in our own way. But when you have something to strive for, you're a part of a team, part of, you know, something bigger, that's when people can do extraordinary things.
Yeah, man, I love that. You know, are you guys managing anybody who at some point was your peer? Or if you have, can you talk about that experience and how you're able to get credibility?
Yeah, I definitely can. This is like a touchy one, you know, just because ours was, you know, ours is a little weird because we were I feel like that might be the situation for, you know, every manager that gets recently promoted. But I think how I would put it in perspective, it's kind of like how my dad coached me in football. Right. It's kind of like he held me to an extremely high standard and pushed me harder because he knew that I was better and I should rise to the occasion. So that's kind of how I always approached it, was just looking at it that way and just being like, you don't get this special treatment, although you think you do. Right. And okay, yeah, we're boys, or yeah, we're friends. Right. And I get that. But I expect so much more out of you, and I can ask you to do things that I can't ask other people to do. So I need you to go do X, Y, and Z for me to set the tone for everybody else. And, you know, in some parts, you know, I'm a little bit harder and say, you know, more extreme things to that person because I know that I can, or just, you know, cross that boundary a little. But ultimately, for me, that's how I've always approached it, is like just push that person a little bit harder because you know you can, and you already have that relationship.
Yeah, I would echo that, right? You have to hold them to the same standard. And even though you have a relationship outside of work, there are still like those lines drawn between manager to rep. And it's still your job to help them in their career. And you can't also underestimate that they still might need, especially working remote right now, they still might need that connection with, you know, someone that is a leader in the org. So still providing that piece to them. But also, like Brad is saying, you can level more with them. And I almost expect more out of someone that was a peer or a former peer versus anyone else, because we have that relationship. They know, they definitely know what I stand for. So I feel like I can ask more of those reps.
Cool. It's like a higher standard because you know that they're already good.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Where they might think, and that's where you have to set that expectation that, oh, this is a free ride. Oh, so cool. Brad or Sonny's my manager. Like, oh, I have the best situation ever. But if you set that, then, you know, every other rep then picks up on that and says, oh, I'm going to skate by too. You know, what's the difference? And so you got to set the tone there. So it's like, all right, you can ask your boy or, you know, whoever it may be to go do something so that everybody else will follow. Be a leader on this team. That's what I'm looking at you for.
Cool. What would you guys say is your superpower as a leader?
For me, I think it's being coachable myself. I think even as you probably hear, as we're going through these questions, a lot of what I'm pointing out are things that I've heard from my leaders today, you know, since I've been a manager, Jess and KD, and really just not putting that pressure on myself. And I find that's often what I've made more mistakes is when I put the pressure on myself to figure things out versus leaning on the experience of other leaders in the org, where obviously there's places like LinkedIn where you can rely on other leaders across the nation, right, that are available if you do want advice, you do want mentorship. So any tough situations, I've found myself able to lean on decades of sales experience versus putting that on myself, and also being coachable, not being tied to a single approach or thinking I know it all. Something that also probably helped me out as a rep is very applicable to being a manager. And on top of that, I think just being able to connect the why, right? The why behind any sales coaching advice, to really help reps understand why we say something, why we ask questions, and the reasoning behind it. I think that's always been kind of my superpower per se when it comes from a coaching perspective.
Right. And that's powerful because that helps them understand when to throw the rules out the window in order to get at the reason they should be doing the thing.
Exactly. Never want them to be in a, if this happens, then I do this. Just flat out, right? Because there's always situations that come up in any given conversation with a prospect. So yeah, if you understand the why, it also gives you the permission to be loose when you need to, but typically give them the framework, help them understand these things, and also help them continue their own development down the road.
I like that answer, Sonny.
Thanks, Brad.
I agree. That's my perspective of you. Yeah. So I would say mine is, you know, I'll use like during the COVID times here as an example, was just creating a team environment during, you know, a very, you know, mentally tough, you know, time period that we're still going through today. But it was crucial, you know, and I'll just give you a little background. Like, I inherited a different team. We actually merged my team with another team during that time. So there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of new people, and, you know, it's just a hard transition to go through. And obviously people don't love change, but I've just done, at least in my opinion, a very good job of creating that team environment where everyone feels like, you know, they're a part of something greater than just living on their own island. And obviously in sales, that's sometimes what it feels like, is very isolating, that you're by yourself making cold calls in your living room or in your bed or wherever you're at. And it feels like you're not really a part of something greater than what you actually are. So I think I've done a pretty good job of that. And because of that, I think I can speak to everybody on an individual basis as if they're the best, you know, and I think that's the biggest piece is, despite if you had a good month, you know, this month, the previous months, you're still the best in my eyes. And I still want to spend just as much time with you because you're a part of this team. And your contribution to this team, whether it be you just making the dials, right? Just the behaviors, even if you don't book a demo, if you don't close a deal, it doesn't matter. But you driving, you know, those metrics and working hard, everybody else on the team picks up on those things and wants to level up with you, whether you're the best or the worst. And so by creating that team environment, I think it's just given, you know, at least in my perspective, a lot of buy-in from every single one of my reps to go out there and try their hardest and do everything that they can to ultimately get what we're looking for as a team.
What do you think has worked for you in order to create that, like, that mindset of I'm part of something bigger?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something with Patient Pop was, you know, going there is everyone's like-minded, your friends are there, right? It's very social. That used to be a huge thing at Patient Pop and why people work there. Because the job is, you know, it's somewhat difficult at times to, you know, get after it every single day and just dial, run your steps, you know,
somewhat
get your vid yards out.
Times, yeah.
Yeah. And you get denied a lot from doctors, and that can be hard. No one likes getting kicked in the teeth every single day. But if you got your best friends there, right, that's what makes it a little bit better. If you're going through it with your best friend, like Sonny and I, that's, you know, why we're still here today. You know, it just makes things a lot easier. So I try to create that environment. So we have a meeting in the morning, all of us, you know, very light. We still talk about the things that we need to get done that day, you know, different housekeeping things, but also where we're at in the month, you know, who's got what's happening. But then we do an afternoon meeting too, where it's more event sesh. right? We let them just talk about, you know, some BS that happened with a doctor, something that's so annoying, you know, whatever, or just talk about things that are happening in life, you know, or, you know, something that was fun, exciting, stupid video that they saw, and just try to create that environment that they feel safe and they actually enjoy and want to come to work, you know, just because of those pieces. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. And then just treating them like, you know, humans. You know, I get it. Not everybody's in the same situation here. You know, some people are having difficult things, you know, happening with their families, or, you know, money might not be the best, you know, like it used to be. It's not coming in the same way, right? Times are different. So just recognizing that and recognizing that, you know, everybody needs something different is has just been key.
You know, Sunny, I like that you talked about the checklist of questions for one-on-one. What do you guys do for one-on-ones now? What do you feel like is the purpose of a one-on-one? And then what are some tips you could share with our audience to make them really effective?
Yeah, so we use this tool called Petari. Brad's giggling. So Petari is, because we're always yelling at our reps, not yelling, but just saying, hey, fill out the Petari like every Monday, try to get these in. And it's just this list of questions where reps can see, okay, like how are you tracking this week? How are you tracking to the month? What are your metrics for the last week? What are your metrics month to date? There's even sections about self-care. Like, what was your self-care goal last week? What is it this week? So sometimes it's like, walk 4 miles. I nailed that last week. I'm actually going to do 5 this week. And it helps us just give a really good idea of, like, at least for me, how's a rep thinking? How are they feeling about their performance before they even walk into the one-on-one? So we can kind of hammer those pieces out, like, fairly quickly, right? Because they're reporting their activity to you. They're owning it. So oftentimes they'll spearhead that conversation where, hey, my numbers were low last week and I am going to go out. I know I got to go build my top of funnel this week. I know where I'm at. Okay, cool. Let's chat about it. What are we actually going to put into action this week? And it can kind of foster these better conversations versus us leading the front as managers where you're hammering on them about their activity, which is a totally different vibe. So that's step one. We'll go through Petari, talk through any big deals in the pipeline, if they need any help on next steps, which is a pretty quick conversation typically, because we'll have like separate deal reviews outside of that. And then issue diagnosis, right? If there's any issue with one of those metrics that we see in Petari, just getting buy-in on that metric kind of being a problem, agreeing to a coaching plan, and really getting an investment from both party sides that they both agree that maybe the close rate is a problem. Okay, will you agree to listen to 2 gongs? And how would you feel if we did 2 practice sessions this week? Do you think that would be helpful? Yeah, okay, so let's do it. Score these gongs or these recorded calls so we can see what you think and use our scorecards so you can see what's actually going wrong. And then agreeing to check-ins. Is it okay if I check in on this with you again next week to just make sure that we're making this improvement? Like once we discover, hey, the problem's in discovery of the demo, is it okay if we check in and do a practice session and make sure you have this locked in? Yeah, cool. So now we can have better conversations about not only the metrics, but how we're going to get them better, what's the game plan, and the check-in for the week afterwards, and then leave some time at the end for life talks just to connect on what's kind of going on with them. And, you know, I think it's always nice to even chat about their life, honestly, because I'm just curious, because a lot of the reps, like when you work with people for a year plus, you get close to them and you know what's going on with their life. And I think it's always important to keep checking in with them and seeing what's going on there too. How about you, Brad? How are you running these?
Well, I'm running them the same exact way. I think the biggest thing is which lever to pull. That's always KD's thing. You know, it's like, pick one metric and what are we going to work on? And it's not just for 1 week, right? Let's do it until you've mastered it, right? It's not like, hey, you know, go work on, you know, saying this at the end of a close, you know, or at the end of a demo, right? And then you hear it once, you're like, okay, you've mastered it. But instead, actually, you know, staying on top of that and following up with that to make sure that we're constantly practicing it in our coaching sessions, role-playing it, and actually mastering it. So now, okay, we're good on that. Now let's figure out what else we need to do to help, you know, close that gap. So that's one of the biggest things. And then we also do self-management plans right now, which is, you know, heavy metrics, but using the metrics to our advantage. I'll even use, you know, Derek, you as an example when you came in as our manager. I think it was the first month you noticed that I was only making like 40 dials or something like that. And you're like, you're only making $40. Walk me through that. Tell me about that. You know, what's going on? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, why are you on my shit? Right? Like, what's going on? And, you know, I'd tell you my process and I would say, well, I have to do this. I have to do all this research. And, you know, I'm looking into this. And you're like, well, do you ever talk to those people? I'm like, well, no. Then like, then why are you doing it? Right? Just make the call and then see what happens. And then, so that's when you asked me, all right, let's see what happens when you go and make 100 dials. Cause if you make 100 dials and you talk to 4 people, let's say you're going to get one of them. Right. And then you got a 25% rate right there. So that's, you know, something that's just a good example of just making the adjustment with the metrics and actually trying something new and then seeing what the results are. And then I think after that conversation, I just blew it out of the water because mm-hmm. the metrics don't lie. And so that's what we try to do, is not just be like, why aren't you making the dials, but rather like walk me through, you know, what you're thinking and how we can make this adjustment to help you get closer to your goal.
You got the Santa patient pop. You can't outsell math, right? You can't outsell yeah. math. And yep. I think having that lead the conversations is pretty big. That's
yep.
You can't outsell math. I love that.
Do you remember cool, that guys. Conversation, Derek?
Yeah, I literally told that story today to somebody.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
But it was a game changer. You know, it's what I needed to know. If you never said that to me, I would still be making 40 dials and, you know, I'd be working at, I don't know, Chick-fil-A or something like that.
Yeah. 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 And then you went on and you were like the top SDR mm-hmm. until you got promoted.
And that was my advice to every other SDR that came in. It's just like, you don't need to do the research. Do a little bit, save that information. You'll use it on the next call, but I guarantee you're most likely not going to talk to who you want to talk to on this call. So just make mm-hmm. the calls, get the touches. And then forever that became a standard.
How you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, thanks. That's so awesome, guys. Thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your wisdom. I think I want to point out to everybody who's listening that, yeah, you both got promoted really fast. You went from SDR to AE in 6 to 12 months, AE to manager in about a year, something like that, give or take.
About mm-hmm. and then 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
2 years. So you're both really young guys and, you know, you're excellent managers. I worked with you as leaders. I know people on your team, right? So I vouch for you. Like I know that you're actually really good and
thanks, sir.
You have so much that other people I feel like could learn from. So thanks for coming out and sharing it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it delivered. This is exactly how I thought it was going to go. And
yeah.
It's beast that you're doing this podcast. So we're definitely happy to be a part of it.
Thanks, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll probably like the Next Level Private Mastermind. It's a small group of newish sales leaders who are helping each other grow faster and become better. Each week, we cover a specific topic and troubleshoot actual issues new leaders run into. The link is in the show notes or go to derekjankowski.com/mastermind. Thanks.